Jerry Bader Show, 10:35. In the last half hour, we shared several examples. Condi Rice, Rafi Williams, who works for the Republican Party, son of liberal Juan Williams, black, criticized for conservative statements. Condi banned from one campus, Ben Carson banned from another. It's because liberals do censor conservative language whenever they can, or they simply try to vilify it into marginalization, which is what they're doing with Paul Ryan, who's not a black conservative, but a conservative, who had the temerity to say, look, our 50-year war on poverty isn't working. Throwing money at the problem isn't the answer. We need to empower the black community. And he didn't say black, but he said inner city. And that is what he meant. And no, he didn't call them lazy. What he did say is there's has been this culture of not being excited about working. It's true. He's being labeled a racist. He called all black people lazy. No, he didn't. And the libs' worst fear is this is going to resonate. That, look, we have to talk to the black community. And a liberal was upset last week because I called poor people stooges. That is the way liberals play them. You need us. You need us, boy, to get out of that poverty. No, what liberals need is to keep them in poverty. Where would the liberal movement be if their war on poverty actually worked? That's their greatest fear of Paul Ryan, that his ideas might work and help lift people out of poverty and recognize there is a problem in the black community. Real Time with Bill Maher took this up. He read the Ryan quotes and then had his panel react. He read exactly what Paul Ryan said, and then had his panel react. Then he did this.
And not just blame people.
Let me read something else.
It's a combination of both, right?
Let me read. Here's something else Paul Ryan said. He said, when it comes to getting an education, too many of our young people just can't be bothered. They're sitting on couches for hours playing video games, watching TV. Instead of dreaming of being a teacher or a lawyer or a business leader, they're fantasizing about being a baller or a rapper.
I'm a comedian.
Oh, wait, that wasn't him. That was Michelle Obama. Michelle Obama said that.
No, I don't think this is a Republican.
Hush, silence.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think this is a Republican or a Democrat issue. This is a people issue.
Yeah, but you just called
Suddenly.
What? You just called Ryan a racist.
Did I actually say he's a racist?
Basically.
No, I said he's talking about black people.
Basically
calling somebody a racist.
Like,
you're a racist or you're not a racist.
I just read this and you thought it was from Paul Ryan.
Because you told me it was.
For a reason. I'm just asking, is something less true if a white person says it about black people?
The truth is the truth and a lie is a lie. I'm not here to represent the side of, like, if black people say it, it's more true because black people said it.
No, but it does sound like Michelle Obama is agreeing with Paul Ryan. It does. This sounds more. Even more like, hey, black people, don't be lazy.
Well, that sort of
Paul Ryan.
First of all, where did she say it? She said it in front of black people with no cameras.
She said it at Bowie State commencement speech.
See, there we go. That's black people. She's talking to black people. We talk to each other differently than we talk when we're in front of you.
All right.
Are you serious? Obviously, I don't know who that panelist is, but he is black. We talk to each other differently. So, in other words, it's okay if a black leader says, hey, we have a problem within our community. But if a white person says it, then there's a problem. Actually, I applaud the fact that Michelle Obama said that. But his point is, yeah, it's okay for black people to call out the black community, but white people shouldn't. But it's okay for the black community to call out the white community if they think they're being racist or whatever. So only blacks have the privilege of saying there's a problem in the black community. And if whites say the same thing Michelle Obama said, then it's racist. Bill Maher, by the way, this does not make Bill Maher any less an insufferable liberal. Don't misunderstand. But he has done this before, where he has called out hypocrisy. Rush Limbaugh was criticized for saying that 12 Years a Slave won an Oscar. It was, no matter how good or bad the movie was, it was going to win an Oscar because it had the word slave in it. Bill Maher defended him because Maher had said the same thing. When white people say something that is true about the black community, it's criticized. When black people say, and by the way, President Obama, not just Mrs. Obama, President Obama said the same thing with his My Brother's Keeper effort. that it's to deal with the problems in the black community. Yet if a white person points it out, all hell breaks loose. So yeah, I will applaud, in this one instance, Bill Maher for his intellectual honesty. I want to start something that's going to take most of the rest of the show. Jason, I will leave a minute for Brewer predictions somewhere. You may or may not remember the name Kelly Rindfleisch. Kelly Rindfleisch was an employee in Governor Scott Walker's then Milwaukee County Executive Office, and she was the one caught in the grinding gears of John Doe 1.0. She was convicted for basically sending fundraising emails during the workday for Brett Davis, then a candidate for lieutenant governor. She's now appealing that conviction, but it has been released inadvertently or on purpose that she is still a target in John Doe 2.0. She has never spoken publicly until over the weekend when she was the subject of the Saturday interview, a regular feature in the Saturday Wall Street Journal by Colin Levy. Caught in the political grinder. I'm going to pick this up in the 5th paragraph. I'm going to read some of it and then we'll finish it before the end of the show. The story began in January 2010 when Ms. Rindfleisch was hired as a policy advisor for Mr. Walker's Milwaukee County Executive's Office. To make her mortgage payments, she took a second job as a part-time fundraiser for Mr. Davis. Mr. Walker was gearing up to run for governor in 2010, but endorsed no one for lieutenant governor. Then in May 2010, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel ran a story about Darlene Wink, a constituent services coordinator in the county executive's office who had posted pro-Walker comments on the newspaper's website. Investigators from the DA's office soon seized documents in a computer from Ms. Wink's office. Affidavits in support of search warrants that we have seen, that is the Journal Sentinel, from that period, the Wall Street Journal, from that period, show that prosecutors and chief investigator David Buddy used this as an opening to investigate others who had corresponded with Ms. Wink. In other words, anyone who communicated with that target now became a target, including Kelly Rindfleisch. On November 1, 2010, the day before Walker was elected governor, investigators from the DA's office, including Mr. Buddy, returned with a warrant for the office computer's hard drives. Our chief of staff wasn't there, so I was the one who had to deal with it, Ms. Rindfleisch says. Investigators told her they were looking into her work for Mr. Davis and had search warrants for her house and car. I said I needed to contact County Corporation Counsel, and they just wouldn't let me. I assume they're using the John Doe secrecy order to justify that. Under Wisconsin law, John Doe's kind of a grand jury, you know the deal. By the way, Mr. Buddy had a recall Walker sign in his front yard. She soon learned the issue was her fundraising work for Mr. Davis. Though she had not used county resources, she did use her personal computer, personal phone, and email accounts to do the fundraising. She didn't always leave the building. For me, it didn't make sense to take 5 minutes to get outside to respond to an email for 30 seconds and then spend another 5 minutes to get back inside, she says. The only thing I was using was time. Though her hours were supposed to be 7 a.m. to 4 p.m., she said she never left at 4 p.m. and averaged 9 to 10 hours a day in the office. According to prosecutors, her work for Mr. Davis was perfectly legal, but her presence in a government building when she sent the emails was a felony. This is how ticky-tacky this was. With that threat dangling, the DA's office gave, and this is where it gets very interesting. With that threat dangling, the DA's office gave Ms. Rindfleisch immunity to talk about anything related to Mr. Walker and told her that investigators would look favorably if she cooperated. In other words, this was all about getting Scott Walker. Though her hours were, I had answered all of their questions truthfully and provided any factual information I had knowledge of, Ms. Rindfleisch says, but they kept asking the same questions and intimating that she was holding back. In other words, what aren't you telling us? In one of the interrogations, they had the gall to bring up my dad. They were going through my emails, and my dad's obituary was in there. I wanted to say my dad would be disgusted by what you're doing, that you're destroying everything he put his life on the line for, fighting in World War II. As an older single woman, she's in her mid-40s, Ms. Rindfleisch says prosecutors may have seen her as an easy target who could be pressured to implicate others. I know who they were targeting. They were targeting Tim Russell, Jim Vila, and John Hiller, who are the three closest to the governor. I felt they were trying to intimidate me into providing speculation that would implicate them in some wrongdoing. But I didn't have any knowledge of anything they've done wrong. When her cooperation produced nothing, against Mr. Walker. Democratic District Attorney John Chisholm charged Ms. Rindfleisch in January 2012 with four felony counts of misconduct in public office. I've been told again and again and again that if I cooperated, they'd look favorably on this. And instead, they charged me with four felonies that could have amounted to 12 and a half years in prison. What they believed is she was hiding something, so they thought they would try to roll her by charging her. It didn't happen. Fundraising in a public building is a misdemeanor in Wisconsin, but in Ms. Rindfleisch's case, prosecutors opted for the much less specific misconduct charge in order to convict her of a felony. In other words, they could have charged her with a very specific misdemeanor of misconduct in fundraising in a public building, which almost never gets charged, and the other side does it all the time. Section 946 of the state law bars public officials from acting in a way contrary to their duties and confers a dishonest advantage on themselves or others. By then, the political environment was vicious. Wisconsin was inflamed over Mr. Walker's union reforms, and election recall fervor was at its peak. One of the Madison stations broadcast my address, and this was at the height of the recall, and they were trying to get signatures, she says. She was unable to pay her legal bills. I was in a deep, deep depression, Ms. Rindfleisch says. I knew I wouldn't make it through a trial having to sit there and listen to people talk about me, and I knew that emotionally I couldn't do it. So her lawyer, Franklin Gimbel, got me the best deal he could, pleading no contest to one felony. At a plea hearing, Milwaukee County Circuit Court Judge David Harsher would only accept the deal with a guilty plea. He would not accept no contest. The judge sentenced me to 6 months in jail, 3 years probation, which is completely inconsistent with what other people have been sentenced to do. It was, however, and again, listen carefully, it was, however, consistent with what prosecutors requested in a sentencing memo written by, guess who, Assistant DA Bruce Landgraf. Like many criminal defendants, Ms. Rindfleisch had positive aspects of her life. He wrote, with the exception of a minor detail, she provided no information deemed useful by prosecutors. While that doesn't mean she was untruthful, he continued, it is my judgment that her loyalties rested and continue to rest with the Republican Party in front of Scott Walker. In other words, we believe she has incriminating information she wouldn't reveal. The memo asked the judge not to be swayed by Ms. Rindfleisch's good character, but to see her work as an aggravated offense that is properly addressed with the jail sentence. At the sentencing hearing, and you remember this, Mr. Landgraf spent most of his time discussing issues unrelated to her charges, spending over an hour on a 78-page slideshow, largely composed of emails and other allegations of coordination between the county executive's office and Scott Walker. Nothing at all to do with her sentencing. She's now broke. She liquidated her entire retirement, $75,000 to pay part of my legal fees. She owes thousands of dollars in taxes on the money she withdrew. She asked Phil Prangy, a friend and fundraiser for former Governor Thompson, for help with a legal defense fund. But prosecutors heard about it and called him to ask about it. After that, there was no help. She's a pariah now. Nobody will help her. None. And they're still doing it. In February, prosecutors disclosed her as a target of the current John Doe investigation. Last month, the court released some 27,000 pages of Ms. Rindfleisch's personal emails at the request of Wisconsin media outlets that exposed thousands of personal emails irrelevant to public interest in the case, further isolating her from friends and made it impossible for her to get a job. When the news of the second John Doe probe broke, the man she had been working for doing online marketing stopped returning her calls. She worries about defaulting on her mortgage. Her probation officer has asked if she's considered changing her name. Ms. Rindfleisch realizes she's taking a risk in speaking publicly about her case. I've no doubt there will be repercussions for me talking. They'll figure out a way to do it. But it's going to be harder for them to try to do that. If they put me in jail, at least people will know exactly what they're doing, she says, referring to reprisals by prosecutors. I'm not telling my story to help Scott Walker or to hurt him, she adds. She also points out that Walker hasn't reached out on her behalf either, nor have anyone from the GOP. I don't care who is doing it, the right or the left. I don't want this to happen to anyone. I'm hoping that by telling my story, I can wake people up to realize what's happening. Look, is what she did wrong? Yes. Was it a felony? No. Did it deserve prison time? No. This was an effort to get her to roll on Scott Walker. She didn't have anything on Scott Walker. They didn't believe her. These are the bastards that you're dealing with in these John Doe investigations. And now, if you didn't know, you should have. And now, you know. We'll get to what we can in the time remaining. It's 10:50.
Jerry Bader Show.